Welcome back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and I have in studio with me Matthew Heiss, pastor, reverend, doctor?
Working on the doctor part.
Working on the doctor part. Chief executive for the Lutheran Heritage Foundation, an organization that's coming up on its 25th anniversary.
Correct.
As a missionary support organization, a translator of classic and new resources.
I think you could probably say all those things together, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, why don't you just kind of describe in a nutshell, what
okay.
does the Lutheran Heritage Foundation do?
The Lutheran Heritage Foundation translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. We were founded 24 years ago in the basement of Pastor Robert Ron in the Detroit area, just Macomb, just north of Detroit. And Pastor Ron had seen the need to kind of restore Lutheran literature to the former Soviet countries. So our initial work was actually in Russia. The Soviet Union had fallen just about a year before. And so actually, I made contact with Pastor Ron in 1994 as a volunteer missionary to Russia because my grandparents were German Lutherans who lived in Russia in the Empire of the Tsars and came to America shortly before the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. So, I mean, this kind of meshed, too, with my mindset. And the idea was, okay, we need to restore this. And this means in places like Latvia, in particular, we started in Latvia and Russia, and then Lithuania and some of the former communist countries there, Ukraine and so forth.
I think it's a kind of a little known story how Lutheranism went underground for a lot of time there, how persecuted it was,
right.
how especially the pastors ended up kind of either being killed or jailed, but how the people kept their Lutheranism quietly there, and when the walls came down, they were ready to have it back.
You're actually playing into my dissertation. My dissertation is about the Stalinist repression in the 20s and 30s, so it's not about that part, but of course, you know, I heard the stories when I met with enough Russians who, I mean, one pastor who remembers his family, because I'd always ask them, when do you become a Christian?
Mm.
Many people became Christians after the fall of the Soviet Union, but I would get these others who would say, you know, I've always been a Christian. I said, "No, tell me more about that." Well, Mom kept the Bible in the floorboards.
Right.
And so they would do it that way.
Right.
And retain the faith.
Which is an amazing thing. And so your task then became, particularly with kind of in the start, but this is really what you do all the places you go, is to come in and find those Christians that are there, mm-hmm. not necessarily planning a church, but providing for them, especially if they have a Lutheran ethos or heritage,
mm-hmm.
the resources to support their work, translating the catechism into their language being a primary mm-hmm. task.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, the two books I think that we would work with mostly is we would start with Luther's Small Catechism. And as a former missionary, I can't tell you how valuable this was and how often I would run into people who would say, as they would read it, and they'd say, "This is what I believe,"
yeah.
because that's what's in the Bible. And that was always the great kicker. That's what's in the Bible. And then we would do a children's Bible storybook.
Mm.
And in particular, we'll do a Child's Garden of Bible Stories from CPH 1948, Arthur Gross model. And we've got that up into about 25 languages. The catechisms were up into about 80 right now.
Right, you were holding up for me.
Yeah.
You know, they can't hear you.
I do show
you,
and tell here.
You have it looks like that's in Spanish.
This is actually in French.
In French, the children's Bible story,
right.
and then the catechism was in Farsi.
Was in Farsi, exactly.
Which I didn't know until you told me before the
right.
show started that that's what is spoken in Iran.
Yes, right. And in some portions of Western Afghanistan. So I just returned from Eastern and Central Europe and had the great pleasure to actually distribute these books to quite a few new believers, Afghan and Iranian, in Eastern Germany and Denmark.
And they're hungry for it.
They're hungry for it. Very hungry for it.
So where else? You said 40 different countries. So it's not just Africa. It's not
okay,
just
yeah.
Western Europe.
Yeah, actually, we are now... we're now into about 85 countries, I would say. And language-wise, we're probably approaching 100. We update our numbers. We were about 91 languages maybe a couple months ago, but we have maybe 6, 7, 8 books already in process. So we're pushing 100.
So are you going out and finding these other countries, or are they coming to you? How does that contact
yes.
story happen?
Yes and yes.
Huh.
It's a little bit of both. Now, Pastor Ron, of course, had a lot of these contacts. So, for example, in The Russian translator and coordinator, Konstantin Komarov, who I actually knew in Russia too, he has been working with us about 24 years. And here's a guy who could be a professor at a university, but he sees the importance of this. And now actually is I just got an email from him yesterday. We're looking to maybe do the Concordia Study Bible for celebration of the Reformation next year in Russia. So there are these contexts that Pastor Ron already established. But then along the way on my travels, I connect with people. Sometimes we get in our info box emails out of the blue, and somebody will say, we'd really like to have the catechism in our language. What's your language? And we'd say, okay, who do we know there? I was just at the seminary yesterday talking to my good friend, Dr. John Loom, and what language in the Gambia should we begin the catechism in?
Oh, wow.
So we're hoping to do a project there with him.
So then it's not you doing all this translating work, and it's not even really a team at your office doing all this translating work. You have various teams.
Yes.
Indigenous teams.
Exactly.
All over the world. You were telling me about some of the guys in Latvia that you've been working with for a long time, and they're constantly trying to keep on top of something else, whether it's the catechism or something new from CPH.
Right, and I had the great privilege to give you your book with the autographs, because the guys, when I told them I was going to be talking to you, they said, "Oh, we'd like to write our names in the book," and I said, "Okay, I think it'll be a great present for Pastor Fisk."
I'm humbled. When I got my first copy of it in the mail as a surprise, the book is called Broken. For those of you who don't know, you can find it at CPH or Amazon. But I was incredibly, really humiliated. It's like, well, there's other stuff they should be doing first.
They have done it, though.
But, you know, getting Dr. Luther into the original languages and getting cabinets. And we're still working on that here, right? Yeah, we don't have everything out of the German in the original languages. But it's kind of, it is neat to see, your own stuff get translated as well, and an honor in that. But so talk about these teams, though. You know, who are these guys? How big is a normal group? Is it sometimes just one guy, sometimes 10? It's always different.
It is. It is yes and yes again. Sometimes you'll have a couple of people who will work together. Sometimes you end up farming it out, and we'll have some. For example, let me give you an idea of the Farsi. We had a team here, and this is really a complex process because you're now working in a language. Iranians don't know anything about Lutheranism.
Right.
They're learning about Christianity.
Right.
So, you know, how do we explain some of these concepts? You need to have some theologian who's going to oversee things. And so missionary Hugo Gevers, who's a great story in himself, he's a South African missionary to Germany whose grandfather was a German missionary to South Africa. So the circle has been completed to a certain extent. And Hugo works in Leipzig with Chris Ullman, Dr. Chris Ullman, one of my good friends and one of our missionaries
classmate
there.
Classmate of mine, actually.
And classmate of yours, too. Yeah. So I'm just there with the Ullmans in Leipzig. And we had, as we talked about doing this project, Hugo oversaw it. And then I got this email and I kind of said, you know, things are going a little slow. Any problem? And he said, I apologize. And then he explained. He said, we were stumbling over communion. And I was explaining the concept to the Iranian translator, who said, he tried to describe it in a spiritual context. Mm-hmm. And Hugo said, no. Jesus says, this is my body. This is my blood.
Right.
This is my body. This is my blood. And he said, but it doesn't make sense. And he said,
yeah,
bingo. Oh, I get it. I'm not supposed to really understand this completely in a rational sense. Yes. And the light bulb goes on. And so he says, I apologize for taking the time. I said, no apology necessary. This is the kind of oversight that we look for when we're talking to people. And we need to have some experienced theologian who's really going to then say, okay, now how do you understand this? And work through them on it. And if it slows down the translation, we're all about getting it accurate.
Yeah, to make sure you catch those nuances, which human unbelief, doubt, or worship of reason, as you might say, is not limited to Western culture.
No,
it isn't.
That's
in all of us.
No, it isn't. Exactly.
I have a friend who spent some time in Korea, South Korea, Tom Engler. I don't know if you know Tom.
No, I don't.
He was in Philadelphia again then for a while. But anyhow, he would talk about how the initial translations of our documents into Korean were not real helpful on this. They left wiggle room in the Lord's Supper. And as a result, the churches there to this day continue to be struggling with it. And so, as you plant, what seed you use is what's going to grow there. And it's so important that you make sure that they get it's not, these aren't Lutheran distinctions. These are biblical distinctions.
Exactly.
But that we can translate them away. And especially if you don't know the language well enough, it's easy to hide something in a word that maybe means something else for them that it wouldn't mean for us.
Yeah, you know, we're redoing the translation of the Book of Concord because Dr. G's translation is quite old, and now actually the language is also a little archaic, but they're also firming up some of that.
Yeah.
So that will be done next year. But I talked to Dr. Kolb yesterday about this, and it was kind of interesting because he said, how do you translate Book of Concord? And he just kind of told me, he said, what does that mean in English?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people don't understand what that means in English.
No.
So how are the Koreans doing it? And they're doing a translation kind of like basic Christian doctrine. Well, that's what it is.
It kind of works, yeah.
So, okay, if that works, that's fine.
I've always kind of, I've struggled with the same thought because, you know, Concord, it is a word we use, but we don't use it to mean what it means. Do you think of the Concord jet or something
sure,
like that, right?
Sure, exactly. Yeah.
But the word just means to be in concord as opposed to discord.
Right.
It's the opposite of discord, and the word we would use is harmony.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always thought, like in this really postmodern American sense, it's the Book of Harmony or the Harmony Book, right?
Yeah.
It has this nice, soft feel to it.
It'll make people feel nice. Yeah,
yeah. As opposed to this dogmatic kind of thing. But it's dogma, but dogma also is one of those words that doesn't translate anymore.
Yeah. Or it brings up all these other connotations, negative connotations that people bring with themselves to it. So
yeah, rather than seeing, I mean, and just to kind of close up the Book of Concord thing, that this is a book in accord, in agreement with, in harmony with what the scriptures say about how Jesus has brought harmony to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah? And we want to share that with others, and we don't want them to be turned off by what we call it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, so these are some of the challenges, but I think they're good challenges because, you know, we're communicating with people, we're talking to them, we're trying to understand how things are operating in their culture. Now, in my mission career, I was also in Mongolia, Belarus, Ukraine, Georgia, lots of different places. And you just realize that, you know, I always love the story that a lot of people, and I kind of, I tend to be the guy who kind of wrecks the party by coming in and saying, everybody says, oh, we're all the same. And I said, no, we're not. Some people have just had different cultures. Yeah, I mean, we're maybe interior, but in a sense, everybody brings certain cultural blinders to their understanding of the Christian faith. And so we need to know what those are as we work with people in doing translations.
So then you got kind of three tasks. One is the translation work.
Mm-hmm.
Then you mentioned, but haven't talked about now, distribution work.
Right, yeah.
And then there's also some helping people learn how to use these items.
Yeah, I mean, there's the teaching and publication too, actually, then,
right.
Because we do a lot of printing in Bangkok, of all places. One of our top Dharn Sutta Press is actually kind of this is run by this Buddhist who has done more for the kingdom of God than a lot of people. I mean, we always keep hoping and praying that somewhere along the line it's going to have an impact on him, but he does books like this. I'm showing the children's book of garden stories here in French, and we ship this to Africa through them there. The quality's better than anything we can do. It's cheaper.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll do a lot of publishing there, but sometimes you have to publish within your own country. And I showed you the Farsi Catechism. We did that in Bavaria.
Right.
So that was actually quite well done. So we want to make sure that it's also not a book that as you open it up, it falls apart in your hand too, which kind of reflects a little bit on, I mean, people will look at those things. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've actually received a home published book before from someone, and I really did try to read it. And by the time whole chunks of pages were falling out, I gave up on reading it.
That's kind of like my hammer of God, but it's not their fault. It's just that I reread it again this week,
so
and the
times.
Whole thing just fell apart.
Yeah, which is, now is that one you guys translated?
We have actually translated that into Amharic,
into
the Ethiopian
language,
because the Swedish Lutheran Church was one of the initial missions there, so they know all about this, and we just completed, I mean, you'd think, Hammer of God. Okay, talking about all these Swedish priests and pietism and so forth. Does this translate into 21st century Ethiopia? Well, they know about some of this.
Right, right.
So yeah, they wanted to have this book and they had a whole team work together. And I met one of the translators and he said, you know, I went to Lutheran schools in Ethiopia in the early 1970s before the communists took over and killed Emperor Haile Selassie in 1974. Wow.
Yeah, right. Well, The Hammer of God, I mean, I didn't grow up with a Swedish background at all. And when I first started reading that book, and it was talking about this Swedish pastor out in the middle of the farmlands and all this, I was just like, and this was for seminaries, like, what are they making us read?
Yeah.
By the end of that book, though, it's like, I got to reread this.
Right.
I've three, four, five times because it does translate, and the issues that they're dealing with, they may not all be the same names, mm-hmm. but so much of the same spiritual condition
exactly.
and the same answer from
right.
God. With about a minute left here, anything else you want to share with the listener about the Lutheran Heritage Foundation?
Well, I think one of the things I always like to focus on, too, is we talk about our work overseas, but we don't always talk about our work here within the 50 states of the U.S., because as I like to tell people when I travel around to other churches, the world has come to us. And so we find that we have lots of immigrant groups. So when we talk to pastors, and my former dean, who now works for us, Larry Rockman, Pastor Larry Rockman,
sure.
actually went to the rural ministry conference there. And he always likes to throw this question out, and he says, who's in your neighborhood? And a lot of pastors say, I don't have immigrant groups in my neighborhood.
Yeah, you do.
You're not looking.
Yeah.
You're not looking because there are so many of these groups. We're finding more and more Ethiopians in America. We actually have to do print on demand now for America because of the large number of Ethiopians who are in Virginia, Tennessee, Midwest.
Well, and my thought about even the Farsi Catechism when I was up in North Dakota, the number of Muslim immigrants, they're a lot more like coming from Syria, but they're all over the place, right? To make use of these resources and have them available in your congregation is a fairly valuable thing, something that the Lutheran Heritage Foundation is here to help you with. They
Correct.
Can reach you at what?
It's better to go to our website, www.lhfmissions.org.
LHFmissions.org, the Lutheran Heritage Foundation. Pastor Matthew Heiss here on His Time, Worldwide KFUO. Thank you, Pastor Heiss.
Thank you, Jonathan.
We'll be back in a few minutes.